With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. Cutting through the clutter, this is the Misty Winston Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, hey there, and welcome to the Misty Winston Show here on today's News Talk. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to hang out with me. Appreciate it. So we have a lot of good news, actually, for once today at the start of the show. So also, we have Matthew Arrett on the show today, fellow TNT presenter. Very excited for our conversation with him. But before we jump into that, this is super cool. This is super cool. I'm very excited about this. So earlier today, Stella Assange tweeted out the following. Representative Thomas Massie bringing brother of WikiLeaks founder Assange to State of the Union. This is huge. So I'll read here from the Courier Journal. This is from Hannah Pinsky. She says, U.S. Representative Thomas Massie has invited Gabriel Shipton, the brother of imprisoned WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, as his guest for this week's State of the Union address. The Kentucky Republican decided to bring Shipton as part of his message that the U.S. should drop Assange's criminal charges and stop seeking his extradition. Quote, the U.S. government's ongoing effort to prosecute Julian Assange threatens the First Amendment rights of Americans and should be opposed, Massie said. Quote, during his term in office, I asked President Trump to pardon Mr. Assange, and I was disappointed by his failure to do so. President Biden should stop seeking Assange's extradition and should instead drop the criminal charges currently being pursued by the Department of Justice, end quote. Biden's State of the Union address will be delivered to a joint session of Congress on Thursday evening at the U.S. Capitol in Washington. Each representative and senator is allowed to bring one guest to the event. Assange, who is originally from Australia, started WikiLeaks in 2006. The website published classified documents in 2010 from U.S. Army and intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning, including documents about Iran's backing of militants in Iraq and video footage of a U.S. helicopter attack that killed civilians. In May 2019, the U.S. Justice Department announced a federal grand jury indicted Assange on 17 charges of espionage and one charge of computer misuse. Assange has been held in London's Belmarsh prison for 5 years after he was arrested for skipping bail. Previously, Assange spent 7 years inside the Ecuadorian embassy in London to avoid extradition to Sweden, where he faced allegations of rape and sexual assault. The U.S. wants Assange, 52, sent to the U.S. to face his charges, but Assange's lawyers are trying to stop him from being sent. This month would be the earliest when Assange could find out whether he can challenge extradition. Shipton has advocated for his brother's release, including visiting Washington, D.C. Actually, Gabriel is in town right now, this week, having meetings with members of Congress, including visiting Washington, D.C. to lobby on Assange's behalf. He is the chair of the Assange campaign, which was organized to support and protect Assange and has previously said that Assange's charges have driven a wedge between the U.S. and Australia. Quote, I am honored to be Representative Massie's guest at the State of the Union address. The prosecution of Julian Assange is a direct attack on the First Amendment and the freedom of the press to publish information in the public interest. Representative Massie is a fierce defender of these rights, having introduced legislation that would protect my brother Julian and put an end to the Espionage Act being weaponized against publishers. I hope President Biden can take a new look at the indictment and see it for the threat to democracy that it is, end quote. Last year, Massie sent a bipartisan letter to Biden urging him to drop the prosecution of Assange. Senator Rand Paul, a Republican from Kentucky, also signed the letter. Shipton is also a film producer and produced Ithaca in 2021, which highlights their father's journey to fight to free Assange. Paul, and also just if you want to know who else people are bringing, Rand Paul is bringing Louisville Mayor Craig Greenberg as his guest. And this is the third annual address to Congress and his last before the 2024 Biden's last before the 2024 election. So this is very exciting. This is huge. Now, I still think that our media is going to do everything that it can to avoid talking about this. But I think that there's going to have to be some chatter about it, at least superficially. I think that they'll try to avoid getting into any kind of in-depth conversation. But shout out to Massie. I mean, this guy has been solid on this issue from jump. I don't agree with him on everything, but he has been incredible. I remember last year, sometime I tweeted at him asking him to be louder. He has delivered in that. He, in return, asked for us to continue to put pressure on other members of Congress to get him some backup. We delivered on that. There's been a lot of effort that's been made in Congress. As we mentioned, the D.C. 1986 from Australia. Members of Parliament came to the United States and had meetings with members of Congress. Obviously, I just mentioned Gabriel Shipton is in town currently in D.C. Having meetings, and then obviously we'll be attending the State of the Union on Thursday. So this is big. This is a very big deal. Thank you to Thomas Massie. If you are yourself a supporter of Julian Assange and free speech and press freedom and all that good stuff, reach out to Thomas Massie, either on social media, give his office a call, whatever it is, and just thank him for doing this. He did not have to choose Gabriel Shipton to be his one guest at the State of the Union. So it's very cool that he did that. So encourage that kind of behavior and also continue pressuring your elected representatives, in specific your House members, to sign on to House Resolution 934. That's the piece of legislation that they just mentioned in that piece. So big deal. Very excited about that. Shout out to Thomas Massie for being cool on this issue. Okay, don't forget you can follow me over on the tweeters at Sarcasm Stardust. Check out the Substack. It's mistywinston.substack.com. There's a write-up for the guests of the day every day, so you can find, follow, and support their work as well. And if you would like, shoot me an email, mistywinston@tntradio.live, guest idea, show idea, whatever it is, hit me up and I will try to get back to you. And why not give TNT Radio a follow while you're at it? We're on all the major social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter, and you can help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk TNT.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about.
And that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. It's like Christmas. It's a good day. It's a good day. It's official. Infamous globalist warmonger, U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Victoria Nuland is calling it quits. Yay. Here with the story. Joining me now is TNT News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus. I don't know how excited we should be about this because obviously there's somebody that's equally awful, if not worse, waiting in the wings. But she is a horrendous human being. And I'm very happy to see her go. But tell us about this, Adam.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, you just brought up something I keep thinking about. We hear all these people stepping down and then no one stops to think who's taking their place, right? Anyways, as far as Miss, I still can't believe she's unmarried. Shocking. But yeah, Miss Nuland, Miss F the EU Nuland, I might add, she's stepping down in the coming weeks, according to an official State Department announcement coming from none other than her boss, Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He announced this today, March 5th. They say that John Bass, Undersecretary for Management, will temporarily fulfill her duties until a permanent more psychopathic replacement is found. I added the psychopathic part. Miss Nuland's departure caps over 30 years as a career killer. I mean, sorry, foreign service officer under six presidents and 10 secretaries of state, including as Assistant Secretary of State for Europe during the Obama administration. Why is that important to note? Well, that's when the government in Kyiv was ousted in a U.S.-backed uprising in 2014. Yep. And then here we are today, of course. But anyways, Mr. Blinken praised Ms. Nuland for having, quote, personified President Biden's commitment to put diplomacy back at the center of our foreign policy and revitalize America's global leadership, end quote, referring to Ms. Nuland by her nickname, Toria. The Secretary of State singled out her work in the Ukraine theater as key to Kyiv's ability to push back against the Russian invasion. They really did. It's pretty wild. Here's what Blinken said, quote, but it's Toria's leadership on Ukraine that diplomats and students of foreign policy will study for years to come. Her efforts have been indispensable to confronting Putin's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, marshaling a global coalition to ensure his strategic failure, and helping Ukraine work toward the day when it will be able to stand strongly on its own feet, democratically, economically, and militarily, end quote. He must know something we don't. Or he's fooling himself. While she's won praise from advocates of U.S. foreign interventionalism, Ms. Nuland has, of course, faced sharp criticism in some circles. And I'll bring up the two important ones that most people are familiar with. Various prominent figures have taken aim at Ms. Nuland for her hawkish U.S. foreign policy positions. That's a nice way of putting it, including Elon Musk and the former president, Donald Trump. Mr. Trump said in a video on the Trump War Room account on social media platform X, quote, World War III has never been closer than it is right now. We need to clean house of all the warmongers and America last globalists and the deep state, the Pentagon, the State Department, and the national security industrial complex, end quote. Trump said that one reason he didn't start any wars while in office is because he rejected the catastrophic advice, that's how he described it, of many Washington insiders, while insisting that Russia would not have invaded Ukraine under his watch, and that with the quote unquote right leadership, the Ukraine conflict could be ended in 24 hours. That's debatable. However, he did single out Ms. Nuland by name in his remarks. Quote, "For decades, we've had the very same people, such as Victoria Nuland and many others, just like her, obsessed with pushing Ukraine toward NATO, not to mention the State Department support for uprisings in Ukraine. These people have been seeking confrontation for a long time, much like the case in Iraq and other parts of the world. And now we're teetering on the brink of World War III. He adds, quote, "At the end of my next 4 years, the warmongers and frauds and failures at the senior ranks of our government will all be gone," end quote. Now for Mr. Musk, on the 1 year anniversary of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, he said in a post on X that, quote, "Nobody is pushing this war more than Nuland," end quote. Musk's criticism was a reaction to remarks that Nuland had made in a February 16th, 2023 interview with the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. In it, she called for the removal of Russian military installations from Crimea, saying that, quote, "Ukraine is not going to be safe unless Crimea is at a minimum, demilitarized," end quote. She was asked to respond to Musk's criticism in an interview with the Washington Post, again, February 23rd, 2023, in which she said that if the United States were to stand on the sidelines of the Russia-Ukraine conflict, it would embolden wars of conquest around the world. Yes, we're familiar, but here's what she said at the time, quote, "If this war is to end, it could end tomorrow if Vladimir Putin chose to end it and to withdraw his troops. So this is not about us. This is about choices that Vladimir Putin has made to try to bite off pieces of his neighbor. And if we allow this as the United States, if we don't support the victim in this aggression, then this aggression will be replicated all over the planet," end quote. Yeah, okay. I'm guessing she's tucking her tail and running before Trump gets back into office, Misty. But what do you think about this decision?
I don't know that I care why she's leaving. I really don't care. I'm just glad that she's leaving. She is, I think, easily one of the, I think Aaron Matei called her the queen of warmongers. I think that's an accurate depiction of who she is. I'm very happy that she's leaving. I don't know that it's necessarily that she's worried about Trump, maybe, but I mean, it's not like, I love the quote in there from Trump, like he's pretending like he's going to kick all these bad guys out of government. That's just ridiculous, my guy. You hired the worst of the worst swamp monsters, Mad Dog Mattis, Mike Pompeo, Jeff Sessions. I mean, I could continue down the list. So that always annoys me when he pretends as if he is the guy that's going to come in and clean house. You had the opportunity to do that, my guy. And not only did you not drain the swamp, but you dug under the swamp and found the worst of worst swamp monsters to bring into your cabinet. So that always annoys me. Also, Elon Musk talking about it, he just annoys me in general. So he's just always very frustrating. But I don't know that it matters why she's leaving. I don't care. She is definitely one of the worst warmongers we've ever seen in the history of this country. She doesn't get near the ire that she deserves. I think that she has for a very long time, unless you're in political circles, you're very engaged and involved in these conversations. I think most people don't know who she is, don't know the things that she's responsible for. So she doesn't get near the attention and criticism and frankly hate that she deserves for all of the horrible things that she has done over the years. So I'm very happy to see her gone. I will not miss her even one tiny bit. But again, as I mentioned, I'm not sure who's replacing her. It's definitely not going to be somebody good, though. We know that, right? It's not going to be somebody with actual peace on mind who's going to come in and actually do good things for the world and for the country. It's going to be somebody equally awful, if not worse. So while I'm happy to see her go, I'm also a little bit a little hesitant, a little scared to see who is going to be taking over for Victoria Nuland. But what do you think, Adam?
Yeah, I don't know. She's one of these few people, I mean, at serving as an actual government official for my country, the United States of America, who single-handedly like shaped U.S. policy around the world under a total of 6 presidents, 10 secretaries of state, 3.5 decades. So it's amazing to me, like, just, I mean, she'll be gone, right? But she won't be, like, everything that she put into place, we're still having to live with to this day. So it's very frightening to me. And also, you know, I joke, some of these world leaders, they never have time to settle down and have a family and get married. That's a darn shame. You know, they're too busy running around, running the planet, I guess. But yeah, anyways, maybe she'll take some time now and go date. Go have yourself a nice date, Vicky.
Or don't. I mean, I wouldn't want to wish that on anybody. Maybe don't. But yeah, she's too busy killing other people's families to have one of her own. But I also think it's hilarious, too, that Antony Blinken, his quote here from this RT article made me giggle. He said, quote, "What makes Toria truly exceptional is the fierce passion she brings to fighting for what she believes in most. Freedom, democracy, human rights, and America's enduring capacity to inspire and promote those values around the world," end quote. I mean, the audacity of Antony Blinken saying those words about Victoria Nuland. I don't know if they actually believe their own stuff, their own garbage here. I don't know if they actually truly believe these things about each other and themselves. But I can't think of a more ridiculous sentence that I don't know that I've ever read a more ridiculous sentence that Victoria Nuland cares about freedom, democracy, and human rights. And America's enduring capacity to inspire and promote those values. That's not what we do. That's not what we do. So yeah, I just found that sentence to be pretty hilarious. But yes, good riddance. Good riddance. I love to see it. Again, be mindful of who's taking over for her, but it's always a good day when somebody like Victoria Nuland steps down from power. But again, the policies that she put into place, the things that she did, that's going to have lasting impact for likely decades to come if the American empire doesn't collapse in on itself before then. So good to see her go, but also unfortunate that she was ever in power to begin with. So thanks for bringing us this story, Adam. We will talk to you again tomorrow. As always, hang tight. We'll be back here on TNT.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Royd.
When we sort of collated the numbers and saw this, like 85% of organizations have sort of witnessed some form of fatigue or burnout in their staff, it was like, whoa, this is pretty huge, right? This needs a little bit more attention and some focus. So, I mean, a little surprised that it was that bad everywhere. Not shocked, given that, you know, after we've gone through a lot of the research, the reasons are pretty apparent why this is such a big issue at the moment.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's very alarming news. I mean, it's the culmination of years of ever-increasing attacks across as many threat vectors as possible, now added by AI to boot. And, you know, the constant feeling of being under attack, you can never switch off when you're in the cybersecurity role, because you don't know if that phone call at 3 a.m. is about to tell you that all the company's data's been stolen, everything's been wiped out, and it's your job to get up and go and fix it.
Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Royd on today's News Talk, TNT.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. At first, like so many other women out there, I ignored my symptoms. A slight pressure on my chest, shortness of breath. I thought, I don't have time to be sick. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received 2 stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. I'm so grateful to the American Heart Association. Their research helped save my life. I can enjoy life with my children, my grandchildren, and my friends. Please, listen to your heart. The only reason I'm here today is because I did. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
TNTRadio.live.
Online.
Online.
Online streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
All right. Our guest tonight, as promised, is TNT's very own Matthew Arrett. Matt is a journalist, lecturer, and founder of the Canadian Patriot Review, as well as the Rising Tide Foundation. He's an author with Strategic Culture, The Durand, Fort Russ, whole bunch of places. You can go and check all that stuff out over on the Substack. And also, he has authored several books, including 3 volumes of the series Untold History of Canada, as well as 4 volumes of the series Clash of the Two Americas, and is the author of the new book, Science Unshackled, Restoring Causality to a World in Chaos. And of course, he is the host of Connecting the Dots right here on today's News Talk on Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. Matthew, thank you so much for coming to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me on, Misty.
Yeah, it's great to have a fellow TNT presenter on the show. It's always good to kind of cross-pollinate. So your work is focused pretty heavily on examining the dark underbelly of the world that we perceive around us. I'm always interested in people's origin stories, if you will. I'm not sure how old you are. I'm 42. So for me, I would say there was a kind of a an accumulation of things that kind of snapped me out of the fog. And I'd say that was probably like Occupy 9/11. And then really related to that some years later, and maybe even more significantly for me, was the release of the WikiLeaks Iraq and Afghanistan war logs, collateral murder video, all of that stuff. That really was a wake up call for me. Were you always awake to the kind of hidden truth of what's happening around us, or was there kind of a galvanizing event for you?
Yeah, there's, I think I haven't met anybody who's just been born into this enlightened, state. Not to say that we're enlightened, but we all have our experiences of something that shook us out of normie land. And so for me, I never really, I think for me, it was around 2004 that really was my shocker. When I found myself on as far as I was a fine artist, that's what I was studying in university. And I found myself having disputes with some of my conspiracy theory friends who were into David Icke, aliens, stuff like that. And I wanted to have an open mind, but I couldn't. The way that they were promoting thinking about conspiracies to me was a little bit sloppy, and my mind just rejected it. So I found myself on a doing a project on that involved 9/11 with a grouping of people, pretty much an arts piece. And I just found myself wanting to just absorb a little bit on my own. I didn't really have too much of a hunger for. I sort of suspected that my government, my society was trustworthy still at that point. Silly me. And I stumbled on, I think, some lectures by Michael Rupert, who is a really great investigative journalist, which presented a lot of the cases that my friends had been making to me, but doing it actually competently with really rigorous facts and citations of things I could read and follow. And I was like, aha, that's scary. But it's like, if the official narrative of 9/11 is a lie, and it doesn't take you long before you start tying that into a broader historical tapestry of international bankers, conspiracies, murders of presidents. I'm like, well, okay, this means everything has changed. So all cards are off the table. And I just became kind of obsessed with wanting to figure out, well, how much can I know? And it was empowering in a sense. And I guess I'll stop it there, because as scary as it was, I was like, if my mind can know this through reason, at the very least, I can teach it through reason. I can communicate. And that's, there's a power. It doesn't have power over me in that sense. There's a chance that we're not screwed, basically, you know. So I began to really just obsess with like what can we know, and are there solutions? Is there weaknesses in the machinery? What's worked in the past to prevent New World Order attempts throughout history? Are there any attempts that have worked to derail this type of feudalist agenda? And so that's become my life, I guess, for the past 20 years.
Yeah. And it's so interesting that you talk about that, because I think that, at least as far as I can observe, I think that a lot of what keeps people from diving into these topics in any real and substantive way, I think a lot of people are really just quick to dismiss them as, oh, it's a crazy conspiracy theory, and they just turned away. But I think it's honestly because what you just mentioned there, learning that everything you thought you knew is a lie is really heavy. That's incredibly heavy. And I think that a lot of people are just inherently averse to that. They don't want to go down that rabbit hole because it's uncomfortable. And I think that's it's an unfortunate reality. I think a lot of people are I think a comfortable lie is better for a lot of people than an uncomfortable truth. I think that people struggle getting over that hump of, that recognition that, oh, crap, you know what I mean? Because like you said, once you realize one thing, for example, you use 9/11, once you realize one thing is a lie, that very quickly starts the domino effect of recognizing that so many other things that are connected or not connected are also lies. And I think that what's interesting about that, especially post-COVID, because I think COVID was a massive smack in the face for a lot of people, and an unavoidable one at that, I think, because it was so apparent and it was so overly authoritarian in the way that they were attempting to deal with it. And we've seen like the Patriot Act, we've seen other attempts at that. I don't think that they sold COVID as well as they were hoping to. And so I just think that was, but I mean, what do you think about that? Because I feel like you've probably encountered that yourself in doing what you do. What do you think that's accurate, that it's just really difficult for people to wrap their heads around that uncomfortable reality, that everything that they thought that they knew was a lie? Or is it, what is it about that? I'm always curious what is preventing people from, being able to open their minds to these types of things.
Yeah, I think part of it is an attitude question. Like we have to be a bit subjective in trying to analyze the things logically about, in terms of trying to piece together the reasons why things are the way they are instead of otherwise. And that could be for better or for worse, right? Like, that's always what the mind is yearning to try to, like, find a simple reason that you that can explain a complex process. And the senses are, we just take in complexity, right? Like, if I just think about this experience I'm having with you, it's like a smorgasbord of infinite frequencies of light, of sound, of elements in my room. I mean, there's so much complexity that my senses are just being slapped with. So the mind, and that's all useful, but the mind is the thing that's trying to find the constants. Like, what is the unifying quality of your voice versus all of the other possible voices I could be hearing? Or, you know, what's the basic idea that's uniting things? So the mind and the senses have to find a way to, we have to learn how they work together. And I think in a healthy society, there that's done as early as possible. Like, students are given, like in a healthy society, I would imagine. I'm not that I've experienced that, but from studying, you know, different cultures and their declines and when there were things were going well, there was more of a tendency to want to encourage the students to rediscover things for themselves, learn how their minds work instead of just getting them to focus on memorizing things to get right answers. And I think whenever you have an unhealthy society, it's the opposite. You know, like what we tended to get was a lot of memorize this formula. And you're like, but teacher, why is this formula true? And they're like, just memorize the formula. And you're like, but yeah, but okay. And then it kind of breaks you, right? Like, is knowledge just memorizing things and using recall? And I think that with the people that we're all born into an oligarchically influenced world. Culturally, the entertainment we thought was ours, we have to be a little bit more scrutinizing about, like, no, that there was already a ball in motion to shape the pleasures, the passions, the, you know, the arts. We're like, yeah, why is modern art, like, it looks kind of ugly. Kids are not really happy when they're around a lot of the modern art that they can go into a contemporary art museum, you know, like, but we're told, oh, that's just the natural evolution of art. It's just splattering paints, taking a dump on a canvas, calling it something intellectual. That's why it sells for hundreds of millions of dollars. And you're like, well, but is that really a natural occurrence? Or no, you scratch on that and you're like, oh, okay, the CIA was pouring, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in the 1950s into abstract art, atonal music, like degenerate forms of literature that were then sold to a whole generation of people growing up in the 60s, which was a world of assassinations, Vietnam Wars. We saw the CIA taking over control as well militarily, and everything's been influenced by that. So I think people's ability to just have a relationship with their mind as an empowering thing has been really taken down. There's just not a lot of what discovery is. So I think that back when you try to give them a new way of looking at things, they're not used to that. It's they have a sense of disempowerment already. So they're like, well, I'd rather not know that the building's on fire because I don't know what I don't know what water is. So I don't know what water is, the fire is scary. It would disempower me.
And that's so sad. That's so sad because you're absolutely right. People have been completely, really disconnected from their own ability to think for themselves. And that's just, I mean, our minds have been so manipulated and we've been so really just programmed at this point. And I think it's unavoidable. Like, even those of us like you and I who are aware that it happens, I think it's impossible to avoid it on some level. I think we're all impacted by it to some degree. Obviously, others more than, you know, some other people might be. But for sure, all of us have some like residual impacts from all of this stuff. So, okay, listen, we're going to take a quick break and get headlines. Hang tight. We're back with more on the other side here on TNT.
We're ready.
News. The news is our business, and we never close. Never close.
TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. French President Emmanuel Macron has clarified that France does not plan to send military personnel to Ukraine in the near future, despite his earlier remarks that seem to suggest the possibility. A lawsuit has been filed against Elon Musk and X-Corp by former Twitter senior executives seeking over $128 million in unpaid severance. Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold expressed disappointment with the Supreme Court's unanimous decision to allow former President Donald Trump to appear on Colorado's ballot for the upcoming Super Tuesday caucuses.
Don't miss a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. Available right now to download. Keeping you up to speed on TNT Radio.
All right, we're here with Matthew Arrett, who is the host of Connecting the Dots right here on TNT on Saturdays at 11 a.m. Make sure you check that out. It's a great weekend show. Also the author of the book Science Unshackled, Restoring Causality to a World in Chaos. Super interesting stuff. All of Matt's work is really, it's like we were just mentioning, it's hard. It's difficult stuff to wrap your head around, especially if you're a little new to this. It is a little bit, it's heavy stuff, but I think it's, for me, and I'm sure you feel the same way, and I've had moments of, man, I wish I didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, I wish I could live in that ignorance is bliss type environment where I don't know the awful things that are going on behind closed doors and I can just pretend or just walk around without that knowledge. And I often tell my husband that the worst thing about knowing is that once you know, you can't unknow. There's no going back. And so it is really just kind of a one-way street, and that's it can be a little scary for some people, as I said. And I mean, you mentioned this a little bit before the break there, but you've spoken a lot about how other countries have, to varying degrees, managed to deal with their own quote unquote deep states. And I want to talk about deep states here in a little bit, but that's what I think is so interesting about this, because I'm always curious. I'm somebody who's endlessly fascinated by propaganda, the way that it's used against us, the way that it's weaponized against us, the way that it's been used as a tool of the oligarchy for control and all of that stuff. But it doesn't seem as if America, I mean, I think probably America is the single most propagandized country on earth. I think that that's a pretty legitimate statement to make. I'm sure there's some arguments to be made for some other countries, but is it just that our propaganda has been so much more successful? I know you said it's a bit of an attitude issue. For me, as somebody who wants to figure out solutions to this and figure out ways we can move past this and get people to see behind the veil, I'm just curious what you think, what is preventing Americans specifically, and Canadians, obviously, I think that they kind of go hand in hand, from getting it, from being able to see through this stuff. It's just a very frustrating thing for me when I'm engaging in those conversations with people that it's so difficult for Americans to get their heads around.
Yeah, I know. Me too. And for everybody listening, I'm sure they can identify with that to varying degrees. And I'm a Platonist. I like Plato a lot, and Plato's dialogues have really been a really great benefit to me in appreciating the structure of how the mind moves from a state of ignorance of a thing into knowledge of the thing. So, like, what it's not just by memorizing, like I was saying earlier, which is how we're often taught today to treat knowledge, but it really, if you do that, you might get the right answer, but it's just an opinion. You can't defend it. You can't play with it. You can't improve upon it. It's just something you can memorize and apply, maybe as a formula. As a technician, you can like be a functional engineer with a job that is like, kind of repetitive, that involves using these formulas in coding or whatever else, but it doesn't give you the ability to make further discoveries upon it as a foundation. You can't enjoy that. You can't really defend why it's true. And so in Plato's works, there's always this emphasis upon being able to self-examine your axioms in all of his dialogues, and like revisit what core assumption that you didn't evaluate or examine that's causing a paradox to emerge in the mind. When you're pressing a theory onto reality, there's like cracks. It doesn't always fit. It never will fit perfectly because we'll never know everything. But it's like those cracks where it doesn't fit. That's where the paradoxes or the ironies occur. And that's where it takes sort of a bit of training to get better at smelling out like how to find a paradox and then how to resolve it by generating a new potent thought concept or a resolution, a eureka, that will give you that eureka experience that transforms not just the ignorance into knowledge, but who you are. Like the essence of the person itself is made more noble. Hence in the Meno dialogue regarding the slave boy making a discovery of how to double the square. It's the purpose of the dialogue is about virtue. What is virtue and can virtue be taught? It's not about doubling a square. And this kid it's a great, you can't tackle it literally. Like Plato knows you can't deal with, truth can't be dealt with literally because it's about the discovery. And as soon as you try to like crystallize it in a descriptive way, you kind of remove the aha discovery moment that you want the kid to have. So you have to create a healthy ambiguity, but one that's not like Masonic. Like the way that the Masonic operatives work in the mystery religions is they swim in ambiguity and heighten symbolisms, but there's no reason why a particular symbol in this Kabbalist text or in this Rosicrucian or Hermetic order, doctrine is the way it is and not some other way. It's just whoever infuses the meaning into that Eye of Horus or into that configuration of letters or symbols, whoever is the higher priest who can infuse the meaning into it controls the experience of the initiate going into whatever they think of as their, like, you know, degrees of awareness or awakening. That's garbage. That's actually going to make you more superstitious, less able to use a healthy mind. Whereas in the ambiguity of a Platonic dialogue or in any type of classical literature or art is that there's like an openness for the mind to move, to explore, and to discover. But the artist or the scientist has an intelligibility that they want your mind to understand this discovery, and they take your mind seriously so that they carry you along using potent questions. So again, back to this thing, I think, yeah, our society is just not confident. There's a lack of confidence in those Canadians and Americans, and a lot of, like, the Westerners have really gotten heavy indoctrination under in the 50s and the 60s. You know, how you had the OECD school reforms across the board that were systematically designed to make people less capable of using their minds. In the 50s and the 60s, you had the cyberneticists that were the same people who were bringing online the Club of Rome, who were bringing in cybernetics into the operating system of RAND Corps, of NATO, were also rewiring the school systems to de-emphasize learning ancient Greek, learning Latin, learning original text, and instead focusing on bringing in new math, things that were designed to create good little robots that would behave well. So we're now like several generations into that decay, and so it makes it really, really hard for people to get over their cognitive dissonance fences that have really been built in a serious way.
Well, and having those conversations, I think, too, we've lost the ability to engage in those, and really just curiosity, right? I think that people have lost their capacity for curiosity, and then engaging in those conversations, I think people like to talk at each other rather than to each other. And I think that that's, as you mentioned, it's better to almost kind of try to guide the person to making the discovery for themselves rather than lecture them about whatever it is. And I think that we've all kind of lost that. I think that as much as we've lost confidence, I think we also have this undue arrogance a lot of the times where we think we know it all. And so we're trying to force those opinions or perceptions onto other people rather than just engaging in that dialogue and allowing them to kind of reach those conclusions to themselves. So, I mean, it's kind of it's just a disaster. That's what it is. All right, we're going to take another quick break. Hang tight. We're going to be back here on today's News Talk.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
In case you missed it, Newsbusters highlighted an interview between Washington Post technology and online culture columnist, a woman by the name of Taylor Lorenz. She interviewed the woman that most of us know as Libs of TikTok. Her name is Chaya Raichik. And the topic here was children changing sexes.
But if they're leading happy lives and they just are leading a different...
Well, there are studies that show that they're more suicidal after transition.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, there's a study out of Sweden.
That is not true. That is not true.
Yeah, you can look up the study.
Well, taking into account all of the happy people that have transitioned, who are not harming anyone, you can't come up with a single material harm?
So if someone says, I'll be happier if I'm blind, should a doctor pull their eyes out?
I think that's quite different than gender ideology.
Then Lorenz made this absurd analogy.
I mean, women ascribe to certain gender things. You see women getting boob jobs to affirm their gender. I mean, we're in Los Angeles. We see this kind of gender affirming.
So again, you're comparing boob jobs and nose jobs to buying into the lie that they could change their sex.
Breast enhancements are gender affirming for women.
Yes, didn't you know? Getting a nose job or a boob job is the same as having a child. Change sexes, quote unquote. The lunacy of the left. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg. Catch my show Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on TNT.
Need a ride? Yeah!
Driving with kids is a big responsibility.
Hop in and buckle up!
So don't sweat the small stuff.
You got paint all over our paper!
Get the big stuff right instead.
What does that mean?
Like making sure your kids are in the correct car seat and buckled up for safer travel.
That deserves a wiggly wiggly wig.
To make sure your child is in the right seat for their age and size, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Beep, beep. Yeah.
You're with Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, we're here with Matthew Arrett. We're just having a little chat about some awful things, but you know, it's what's going on around us. So so I mentioned I wanted to talk a little bit about the quote unquote deep state. And the reason why I wanted to do that is because a lot of your work focuses around the deep state or the permanent state, the predator class, whatever phrase you want to use or term you want to use to describe it. But as you point out in your work, at least the what I'm getting from it is that that's a bit overly simplistic and that we can actually trace these people back to these consistent family bloodlines that have existed throughout history that have always kind of, you know, impose their will. And they've really just been in power for a very, very long time, just kind of grooming their offspring to take over as the generations continue. So I think it's important to know and understand your enemies. So do you think that people speak and think about this too broadly? Do you think that we need to have more focused conversations on who these people actually are and how they have managed to get and maintain power over the years?
Well, I think all truth deserves to be understood and shared. It's just that not all facts are created equal. So sometimes I think some people they get into a little bit of the pitchforks and torch mob angry mode a little bit too easily, yeah. Where they just want the names. Give me the list of the names, as if somehow that list is going to help you. What, like knock them off? You want to knock off, you know, the new heir of the Rothschild dynasty, and that's going to make your life better? It's like, no, the problem kind of, you know, is I always cite this Shakespeare quote that the fault is not in our stars, but in ourselves, that we are also underlings. And it doesn't mean that we're entirely to blame for all of our problems, but we do hold a little bit of that. And that we do have to look inward, I think, because if you got a new set of names with the level of cultural mediocrity and decay and corruption that's become more normalized in our current world, I'm quite persuaded that we would get just another array of shadow masters. Instead of those particular names, it would be another set of names using the same techniques that we would fall for as witting dupes or unwitting dupes again. So I do think that, and I try in my Clash of the Two Americas book series to make as much elucidation as I can over what I've figured out or what I've got my mind around about the continuous structure of oligarchical powers that utilize or put a lot of emphasis to maintain and justify their existence on the blood, keeping it in the family, you know. And that's obviously a part of the continuity of the oligarchical structure. But more than that, it's the method of utilizing, you know, there's certain universal constants, whether you go to like the days of ancient Babylon or, you know, the worst collapsing periods of the Roman Empire. There's certain Persia as going into its imperial modality. There's certain constancies that are the same today as they were back then regarding, you know, the need to control, not just by a hereditary elite utilizing a magician priesthood that controls sort of the puppets on the cave wall and certain superstitious rituals, sacred stories, so to speak, that shape how the masses will be permitted to think about their reality, why they are the big questions. So there's certain like controlled narratives. There's certain needs to keep people divided to fight each other so that they're too busy doing that than working together to deal with the 0.1% that's actually making their lives miserable. There's a need to keep them stupid, a need to sort of cut off the ability to differentiate like the quality between human life and the life of a chicken or any other species of like animal life. They want to, you know, just remove those qualitative walls that natural human beings kind of know. You know, killing a chicken's one thing, killing grandma's another thing. It's not the same scales that you can weigh those two things, even though they're both living and have feelings. It's different qualitatively. One has a sacredness, so they want to get rid of those things. So I try to get people to examine that aspect of the oligarchy and the works of, I would say, last thing here, Lyndon LaRouche brought me to, was the first person that gave me like sort of a competent method of analyzing this through a paper I had read back in 2005 and it was written by LaRouche in 1979, and it was called The Secrets Known Only to the Inner Elites, where he's just getting, he was the first person I ever saw who like provided this way of analyzing history the way I just pointed out, as a battle between different worldviews of a society which is an open society, and I don't mean George Soros open society. I mean a society that's capable of making new discoveries, always improving and self-perfecting by knowing the creator, the creation, and the self, and having laws and schools and policy that it awakens from within the nobility of the individual that at the basis of any sovereign nation. That's what you need to have, in opposition to a different way of thinking about everything, which is a faction that has, that I've been referring to, which sees it kind of like the inverse game, like that human beings are just a shell of, you know, made in the image of mud to be controlled by a master, you know, alpha mud class, and thus depopulated in a closed system of zero growth, zero change permitted, no discoveries permitted. And so that's the simplest way I can say something, which is obviously you can unpack that and write books about it. But that's what I try to help people sort of see, and more than the names individually of who they are.
For sure. Well, I mean, the names are good to have. I think it's good to know, again, like I said, it's good to know who your enemies are. It's good to know that they do have names, that they exist. But I think it's structural, right? I mean, this has been going on for a very long time. It is a systemic problem at this point. And so, as you said, I mean, just at the top of the show, we were talking about Victoria Nuland stepping down. And I mentioned that that's great. She's awful. But the person who's going to replace her will be equally as awful, if not worse. And so it really solves no problem other than the fact that she's an awful human being, and I'm glad to see her gone. But that really doesn't, the next person will just continue the same policies and procedures that she put in place. The things that she put in place will be prevalent in our foreign policy for decades to come, regardless of who takes over. So, I mean, I understand completely what you mean. And I think, you know, as we're talking about that, it made me think of, again, I'm somebody who is a little hyper-fixated on media propaganda, that kind of thing. And we're seeing what you just described with the people who are kind of taking over and narrative managers, kind of. And we're seeing that in media right now, this new media that they're trying to create with the likes of Tucker Carlson, for example, who very obviously has ties to intelligence, in my opinion. I think that's really undebatable. His father has ties to intelligence. He tried to be a CIA, which I loved when Putin called him out for that. Made me laugh so hard. That was a fantastic moment from Vladimir Putin. But I think, you know, we're starting to see that sort of build where people think that he is a legitimate alternative, that he is a legitimate outsider. Oh, well, they fired him from Fox News. Well, they did that because they need somebody like him to present themselves as a viable alternative, as somebody who is standing against establishment media, when in fact he is just, he's just been made as like this sort of replacement, like this new media is going, it's basically old media. They're just repackaging it. Is that something that you have seen as well? I think that Elon Musk is another great example on the sort of techie social media side, but I think that we're seeing them try to use these supposed outsiders to kind of corral the sheep again. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I think on very similar lines as you do. And the way I see a lot of these influencers, and they are, I mean, massively influential people, mm-hmm. and is that they represent factions, because the oligarchy is not one. There's not like one consensus that exists within the oligarchy. The oligarchy is united in a general orientation that is agreed upon, but it's not like we see 100% lockstep consensus. You know, there's different groups as well that think that getting at the New World Order involves using the exact same formula that we worked in the 1990s, that worked in 2007, 2008, and they don't want to change course, despite the fact that the world today is not what they imagined that it was supposed to be back in 2001, 2002. It was supposed to be a different world today than mm-hmm. what it turned out to be. And I think that has a lot to do with certain civilizational states having a desire to not die and sacrifice their people on some, you know, Gaia altar of some weird, you know, mass sacrifice. There's and erase their ancient civilizational 5,000 year heritage in India and China and Russia. There's just not that they could have had that desire to do the sacrifice. Like if you had that Boris Yeltsin policy in Russia continue after 1999, yeah, I don't see any reason why Russia would have a lot to hope for right now. But the fact that it does seem like there was a pushback, a reorganization around a much healthier orientation despite its problems. Same thing we could see that in China when they kicked out George Soros and his operatives back in the 1980s. And they've been fighting to extract their deep state operatives who are loyal to the Anglo-American axis for a long time. They've been doing a very good job, I would say, compared to what we've been doing. And mm-hmm. so this has resulted now in the New World Order script of 20 years ago not really falling into place, and some factions would rather just continue going with that. I think other ones that are represented by whatever is managing Tucker Carlson or Elon Musk is a little bit more in tune with their self-interest, I would say, that recognizes that they kind of would prefer not to go along with the nuclear fire burning everything they want to rule over orientation. So I think Tucker was partially deployed, and I'm thankful that he did what he did. I'm not, you know, it's a fine thing, but I have no illusions either. I know what he is, like you pointed out. And I think that he was partially assigned to feel out Putin and the Russian leadership to see if there was something that could convince them to go back to the good old days when Putin was still open to joining NATO back in like 1999, 2000. Is there something there that could peel them, carve them away from China, where there's this really close Russia-China alliance? And Tucker's asking Putin, you know, like, are you afraid of China? You should be afraid of China, right? And Putin's like, no, you're totally confused.
Sure. And I think what's so interesting about that is that it seems to me that we have pushed Russia and China together. Obviously, not the factions controlling Tucker Carlson, as you said. That's probably something that they're trying to avoid and trying to wiggle their way out of. But I think that other factions have certainly made that alliance necessary for both of them, and we're seeing that kind of that whole new group of allies take shape right in front of us. And I think that's super interesting. But yeah, and it's so funny that you said that there are different factions, because I often liken it to it's like high school, but with psychopaths. Like, you know what I mean? There are certainly cliques. There are, you know, there's the cool kids, there's the jocks, there's the, you know, the artsy people, whatever, but they're all psychopaths, and they're all basically working. They all play for the same team, right? They're all cheering the same football team on Friday nights. But it is certainly they're all working towards the same agenda, generally speaking, I think. Obviously, as you just mentioned, there are factions who have varying degrees of agreement on certain issues or whatever, but I think that they're all awful and none of them have our interests at heart at all. I think that's been made very clear. So yeah, and I think that as we wrap up here, that's what I think I wish that we could impress upon people the most, is being able to recognize that for what it is, because I feel like so often I think people are honestly just so desperate. They're desperate for a hero. They're desperate for somebody to guide them out of this. You know, we still have people who think that we can vote our way out of this. RFK is going to save us or whatever it is. And it's just, that's very frustrating to me, because as you mentioned earlier, they spend an awful lot of time making sure that we are arguing amongst ourselves. Because then we're not paying attention to the man behind the curtain. And I say that all the time. And I think that if I could get anything across to people, it would be that your neighbor is not your enemy. I promise you. It doesn't matter if they vote differently than you, if they think about things differently than you, if you disagree with them on a whole host of issues. I promise you, your neighbor is not your enemy, unless you live next door to, you know, the CEO of Boeing or, you know, some other unnamed, most people don't know about, then your neighbor is not your enemy. Our enemies, you know, where very expensive suits and sit in boardrooms. So that's, I wish that people could wrap their heads around that. So talk a little bit about, as we're wrapping up here, where people can find the book and where people can find you talking about. I know you do a lot of interviews on this stuff. And I think that these conversations, I love having them. It's nice to kind of dissect the behind the scenes things. I think that's not a lot of people just focus on those superficial issues that are right in front of us. Not that that's not important, obviously. Those issues are important and they're impacting us day to day. But I think recognizing those root causes, I think, is something I wish we would do more of. So where can people find the book? Where can people find you talking about this stuff? How can people support your work? All that good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for the plug. Yeah, thank you. Well, I guess the books are all easy to find on CanadianPatriot.org. The Substack has also been a godsend. So MatthewArrett.substack has been what I've been using. And you know, the whole question of like, when has the oligarchy failed? That's been sort of my obsession, is like, where have they tried and failed to get their feudalist, depopulated, you know, world, new world orders, which have been, I would say, as a constant intention over centuries. And sometimes it peaks, you know, at the Civil War. That was a moment where there was really supposed to be a break, and it was supposed to be like the reassertion of a global imperial dominance that didn't work out the way it was intended. The same thing around the League of Nations, attempts 1, 2, and 3. There were patriots who were able to utilize certain forces of natural law embedded in things like constitutional law, constitutional banking, that prevented the oligarchy from succeeding. And so I tried to like weave that into as much of my my books and understanding of history. So I'm hoping people can look to that when they're analyzing their current minefield of misinformation that we're currently trying to navigate through. So, yeah, thank you, Missy.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming. And I think that's a great, a point to end on, because I think finding those weak points is vital. Those cracks in the armor, those chinks in the armor, recognizing them when we have those opportunities, because I think those opportunities present themselves more frequently than than most people recognize. And I don't think that we're taking advantage of that nearly enough. I don't think we're pouncing on those opportunities nearly enough and really kind of pressuring into those cracks as they form. Because it's just so hard. I think that we're so bombarded with so much on it, especially right now. It feels like it's just an abundance of just like left, right, left, right. We're just getting punched in the face multiple times a day by awful things. And I think it's really difficult for people to focus on anything, right? I mean, there's genocides taking place. There are journalists being tortured. There's all of that stuff going on. So it's really hard for people to focus. But if we can recognize those cracks when they form and really insert some pressure there when that happens, I really do think that there is some cause for some positivity and some hope there, which is rare. I'm very cynical by nature. So it's very out of character for me. But all right, Matthew, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. I really appreciate you coming on. You're welcome back anytime. As Julian Assange says, learn, challenge, act now, and don't go anywhere. Timothy Shea is right after this on TNT.